Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I'm your host, Real Gerald Quinn, on this Tuesday, May 14th, 2019. As always, we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. We are streaming live here on my YouTube channel, so check that out at Real Deal Podcast. I will put the links of the YouTube channel, link on the website on all of my platforms that I'm on, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, it's on iTunes as well, Stitcher, all of those particular outlets that I'm on. Certainly happy to be with you here on this Tuesday night as we get ready for a big night in the NBA. The NBA draft lottery is coming up at around 8:30, and of course that'll be followed by Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals between Portland and the two-time defending champion Golden State Warriors. Of course, this draft lottery is a generational changing draft lottery, considering who you have, the players that you have in and up top, in particular starting with Zion Williamson, who, unless something insane happens, which is now the realm of possibility, considering how these last couple of NBA off seasons have gone, starting with, Kevin Durant signed with Golden State back in 2016. So it's now the realm of possibility that Williamson will not be the number one pick. But again, I'll be shocked if he's not the number one pick. He could be traded. He could be traded. I mean, depending on which team he goes to. Of course, the New York Knicks had the best odds in terms of percentage of getting him. Got a feeling that the Knicks are not going to get him. You have a number of teams at the top whose fortunes can go. I mean, he goes to Atlanta. He goes to Dallas. If he goes, there's certain teams that he could really change their fortunes if he goes to. He's that great of a player. He's going to be. I think he's going to be a generational talent. I think he's the best prospect to come out of college. Going back, he's the best prospect to come out of college since Anthony Davis. The best prospect to come to the NBA. I would say even going back to LeBron James. So you'll have that going on. We'll be on over the course of the draft lottery. So if anything, it probably won't be over till they're going to stretch it out till 9 o'clock. So we'll keep updates on it. Again, the most important part will be towards the end, whether or not if one of those favorites gets bumped out. If you have somebody like a team that had one of the better worst records, somebody at the bottom half, whether it be like a Lakers or Miami, jumps up, that's when it really gets exciting. Again, you never know how these things are going to go with this, but certainly looking forward to it. And of course, it'll be followed up by Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals with the old guard and two-time defending champion Golden State Warriors taking on Portland Trail Blazers. Both of these teams are coming off dramatic series wins in their last games. And I want to go back to that game six on Friday with Houston and Golden State. Again, I thought Houston was going to win the game. I thought Golden State would win the series in seven games, win game seven at home. But what that game six told you a couple things. Number one, that Golden State is who they are. This is a team that in a four-year span has won more games than anybody in the history of basketball. This is a team that was winning championships before Kevin Durant got there. They have a Hall of Fame backcourt. They have a guy, Draymond Green, who will end up in the Hall of Fame. And they have one of the best role players, if you want to call him that, in NBA history in Andre Iguodala. I will take four All-Stars, three All-Stars, and Andre Iguodala against anyone remaining in the playoffs. I mean, it's just that simple. This team knows how to win. They've done it year in and year out. The key, the big moments of truth. And again, they haven't had too many moments of truth because they've been so dominant over the course of their run. But for the most part, outside of the fourth quarter in Game 7 against Cleveland, that team has been money when it's counted the most. And After the Kevin Durant injury, you had people just, for whatever reason, writing them off as if they don't have three remaining All-Stars along with Andre Iguodala, foolishly writing that team off, which to me made zero sense. Again, they know they had the most important, other than having still, even without Kevin Durant, other than having still the most talent in the NBA, they have the most important intangible that you can have as a championship team versus the rest of these teams that are remaining in the playoffs. They know how to win at the highest level. Milwaukee, Toronto, Portland do not, because they've never done it before at the highest level. Okay. So if you want to pick against them, you can bet against, you can pick against them if you want. But out of the four main teams, Golden State is still the team to beat, not only in this series, but even whoever they face in the NBA Finals. Now, again, that gap has closed dramatically. The NBA Finals this year will be a real series. A real series. Regardless of who it is, whether it's Milwaukee or Toronto. And again, I'm not dismissing Portland as far as being competitive for Golden State, but they're not ready. Portland's not ready for this level as far as Western Conference Finals. Once you get here, first round, second round, once you get to Western Conference Finals, once you get to the NBA Finals, it's a whole new ball game. So it is a different level of basketball. It's a different level of intensity. It is a new, I mean, you, the level, different level of talent. You're facing a day, Portland is facing, even without Kevin Durant, a legendary team, an iconic team. And in order to take out an iconic team, you need iconic performances. And that's what you didn't get from the Houston Rockets. And from their superstar and one time MVP and probably run MVP runner-up this year, there was James Harden. Yeah, James Harden put up numbers. His numbers are very good. He had some big games, had three a few 30-point games, had some moments here and there. But he wasn't dominant. When the Spurs took out the Lakers 2003 and denied the Lakers a chance at a possible four-peat. Tim Duncan, they beat him in six games that year, and they beat him because they had a dominant player in Tim Duncan who ended that series with 37 and 16 in that game six against the Lakers when Shaq and Kobe were still in there, was still in their primes. That's what you have to have. You take it, you want to take out a dynasty, you want to take out a legendary team, your best players have to be not good, they have to be great. And to me, I look at the Houston Rockets. Everybody wants to talk about, well, the style of play. Their style of play couldn't get it done. Dribble, 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 and so on and so on. It wasn't the style of play that couldn't get it done. It was the lack of mental toughness to me that couldn't get it done for Houston. Houston's style of play, I think, actually bothers Golden State more than any team in the league because. That they take Golden State, they almost turn Golden State into an isolation team with just the walking the ball up. They can muck up the game enough. They can besides that last game, Houston didn't defend well in the second half, in particular in that game six. But for the most part, Houston's style of play out there and their physicality bother Golden State. So to me, it's mental with them. They mentally cannot stand up to Golden State. They mentally can't stand up to them. And it begins with one James Harden. And I think, I'm not gonna bat just rip Houston because I don't think they were supposed to win this series. Golden State is better than Houston. Golden State has more talent than the Houston Rockets, period. You can sit up here and talk about what could have happened last year, what should have happened. All you need to know is last year, Golden State, won the series in seven games. Chris Paul didn't play the last two games. You want to say, people want to say, well, if Chris Paul would have played, maybe they would have won. Maybe. Well, you also have to remember Andre Iguodala was out as well. This year, again, no Kevin Durant for basically, the last, what, quarter of game five and the entire game six. And Golden State still wins. So that should tell you right there that right then and there, not only with the team that has the most talent, but the team that just knows how to win. Houston as a team just doesn't know how to win at that level. And they had opportunities. I thought, again, I thought the series was over after game five from a standpoint of I thought they blew their chance. I thought that game five, they had an enormous opportunity and a big time shot to win game five. They should have won game five and had game six being up 3 games to 2. No Kevin Durant coming back from 20. The Oracle crowd was quiet. Golden State was vulnerable. Steph Curry wasn't playing great at the time. Series got the 3-2 Golden State. Golden State was going to win one of those two games. This is all there is to it. Again, give Golden State a lot of credit. That team knows how to win at the highest level of levels. And right now, I think, to be honest with you, that was Houston's best shot to advance to get to the NBA Finals. I think the rest of the Western Conference is coming. You'll see a team tonight, Portland, that's only going to get better. They have young talent. They have their two best players that are in their prime. And and a guy who a lot of people thought was their second best player in Nurkic, you know, he's young and he'll be back next year. Exactly, you know, that team, so Portland is a loaded basketball team. They don't even need, you know, Cantor probably won't be on the team next year, but they don't even need him to be on the team next year. They'll get Nurkic back and they'll get Zach Collins. I think is going to be a very good player in this league. As far as the other game seven, as far as the Eastern Conference goes, because Milwaukee and Toronto, the two teams that most people expected to play for the Eastern Conference Championship, Eastern Conference Finals, will square off tomorrow. I like Milwaukee in that series. I just think Milwaukee has more balance. I think Toronto is going to have a hard time scoring. Even if Kawhi can get 30 to 35 in this series, I just don't think that's going to be enough. That game seven, you have to give Philadelphia a lot of credit. I thought the game would be close. I thought that game was right in Philadelphia's wheelhouse as far as physicality, as far as the fact that there were a number of guys on Toronto who frankly did not want the basketball, which makes Kawhi Leonard's performance that much, you know, it kind of reminded me of Michael Jordan 98. Okay. It's the end of the Bulls dynasty. Pippen had a bad back. Rodman at that point, you know, really wasn't giving the Bulls anything in that particular game. You had Kukoc, a bunch of role players, and Jordan single-handedly won that game. And that's how I felt like Kawhi Leonard did. Outside of a pretty good game by Serge Ibaka, Kawhi Leonard carried Toronto in that game. Took 39 shots. He had to take all of them. They needed every single one of them. And hitting one of the most dramatic shots in NBA history, first time a Game 7 had been a Game 7 walk-off shot, buzzer beater in Game 7 to win a series. First time that ever happened. Jordan's shot was in Game 5. For the record, against Cleveland back in 89. I want to say 89. Yeah, in 89. That was, of course, one of the shots, you know, like this. Again, that was a game five. This was a game seven. It kind of reminded me of that because no one else wanted to shoot the basketball. Kyle, you know, Siakam, none of these guys, Siakam, even Gasol. Well, Gasol had to guard Embiid. So I'm very concerned about how Toronto is going to score in this series. See, the Greek Freak does not have to get 30 and 35 for Milwaukee to win the series. They're going to have Brogdon back. Milwaukee, I think, Milwaukee is much deeper. I think they have more options, and they have less room for error in terms of the star players. Like, Toronto, I don't even think the Greek Freak has to be great for them to win the series. I think it'll be a competitive series, but I like Milwaukee in six games. As far as the Sixers go, again, I give the Sixers a lot of credit. They played much better in this series than I thought that they were going to play. I thought Toronto would win comfortably in six games. And I thought it would be a 3-1 six game series, not a 2-2 six game series. But if I'm Philadelphia, Brett Brown, of course, is going to be back. Will be back next year. Again, I'm not the biggest fan of Brett Brown, but he did coach a very good series with some of the moves that he made. The bottom line to me in Philadelphia is their two best players, their two star players, their two all-stars have to grow up. Ben Simmons has to forget about getting a jump shot. He has to shoot the basketball, and Joel Embiid has to mentally grow up. These little knick-knack injuries, gastritis, cold, stomach ache, all this nonsense. He has, listen, if you're going to be a superstar of a team, if you're going to be one of the best players in the league, he has to carry himself as one of the best players in the league. And I think from a talent standpoint, Joel Embiid, without question, is a legit top 7 to 8 player in this league. Ben Simmons could be a top 15 player, maybe even a top 10 player from a potential and from a talent standpoint. If he ever had the confidence to shoot the basketball, and if he ever improved his foul shooting, his foul shooting percentage, and he should be a top 15, top 10 player. You got everything you wanted to get out of Butler and Tobias Harris as third and fourth options. Now, if I'm Philadelphia, I would try to keep all of my players. I would try to run it back one more year. They played much better than I thought they were going to play in the postseason. After a little struggle in game one against Brooklyn, we're able to handle them relatively easily and gave Toronto all they could handle. And I frankly think that Philadelphia is a better team than Toronto. I just think that Toronto had Kawhi Leonard and Philadelphia did not, to me. And that was the difference in the series. Kawhi Leonard played like a superstar. And for the most part, Joel Embiid did not. He was inconsistent. Now again, I understand that he wasn't playing at, he was winded at times. I understand that he was that the knee wasn't feeling great. But if you're a superstar, you gotta be able to play through those things. And you gotta be able to play through those things at a high level. Again, Philadelphia is gonna have a lot of questions to answer in the offseason, whether or not, I don't think, I think they're going to lose. I can see them signing Jimmy Butler and losing Tobias Harris. There have been some small speculation, some little bit of smoke in regards to them possibly losing, trying to trade Ben Simmons. I believe it when I see it. I mean, again, he's an asset, and still on a rookie deal, so he can be moved. But I think that if you want to depend, I think that you would want to hold on to Ben Simmons at least one more year to see what you can do with Simmons and Embiid and Jimmy Butler as your third guy. Somebody's gonna give Jimmy Butler $150 million. Somebody, we'll see whether it's not it's the Sixers, but somebody, Jimmy Butler's gonna get his $150 million from somebody. The other big story in the NBA over the weekend, besides this great weekend of basketball, which really started Friday and concluded Sunday, is the dysfunction and the disaster that is one that is the Los Angeles Lakers. Los Angeles Lakers hired Frank Vogel as their coach. They get him at 3 years, $15 million. Jason Kidd will be his assistant. Basically, coaching waiting, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm looking at the Lakers right now, and I look at the Lakers as the Knicks West, to be honest with you. The Lakers, they have a guy in Kurt Rambis who had a 28%, who had a winning percentage of 284 as a head coach, basically running the franchise. I mean, Jeannie Buss is being advised by Kurt Rambis. How they're conducting their interviews with these coaches, they just completely botched the Ty Lue, Ty Lue and that whole deal. Trying to basically lowball a guy who had been in four straight NBA finals and had won a championship back in 2016. And I mean, Frank Vogel might have been choice number five for all I know. And I listen, there's no logic to why you would hire Frank Vogel other than you just don't know what the hell you're doing as a franchise. There's no logic to it. I mean, people saying, well, LeBron respects Frank Vogel. Based on what? Based on, him, Vogel made, based on the fact that he competed against Vogel's teams in the Eastern Conference Finals, 5 years ago, 5 and 6 years ago. And Frank Vogel's a decent coach. But I didn't hear about anybody outside the Lakers knocking on Frank Vogel's door for these coaching spots, for any open coaching or coaching positions. I mean, the Lakers are so bad right now. You have Monty Williams turning down a team that's with LeBron James on it in Los Angeles, a iconic franchise, for another dysfunctional franchise in the Phoenix Suns. And I know Phoenix has some good young pieces, but they're still dysfunctional. They're still a joke of a franchise as well. That's how low the Lakers have fallen. People around the league are laughing at the Los Angeles Lakers and Jeannie Buss right now. So, again, listen, to me, if you want Jason Kidd to coach the team, just hire Jason Kidd as the head coach. I don't understand this idea that, the reason why the Lakers didn't want to hire Jason Kidd as the head coach is because of his reputation with the domestic violence and some of the things that went on. Then why is he even a part of your franchise? I mean, what is the difference between him being the assistant coach and the head coach if his reputation is if you feel like from a public perception standpoint that you don't want him a part of your franchise, or you feel like that's an issue to hire him as your head coach, then he shouldn't be on your staff at all, because he's going to Jason Kidd will be the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers before the season's up. I would give it maybe a month or 2 months. It will be before this year, before Christmas. Jason Kidd will be the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Make no mistake about it. And again, I can't knock Frank Vogel for taking the job. $5 million, $15 million is $15 million. And he is still the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. So I'm not going to knock him for taking the job, but, if you're Ty Lue or somebody else, you're not having assistant coaches appointed to your staff. If I'm coaching a team, I'm picking my own staff out. This is all there is to it. I'm not going to be a part of a team, especially a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 6 years, and allow them to dictate who's going to be on my coaching staff. This is not going to happen if I'm an established coach or a coach with any – who has won at a high level. Now, Frank Vogel has been to the playoffs, but he's not on that level of coach. Not Carlisle, Popovich, even a Doc Rivers to a lesser extent. He's just not that coach. He's a safe choice. He's a middle of the pack coach. Not great, but not terrible at the same time. Again, I don't see how anybody would go in feeling that LeBron James is going to respect Frank Vogel based on Frank Vogel's track record versus, what you have in LeBron, basically a guy who, controls every franchise that he's ever been to, with the exception of the Miami Heat. Wanted to get to this Tiger Woods story as we are less than basically 2 days away from the PGA Championship. Of course, the PGA Championship was pushed up this year. Normally, it is the last major of the PGA season, and takes place in mid to late August. It is, of course, pushed up to May, which I have no problem with. So Tiger Woods will come in trying to win his second major of the year, but that kind of has taken a backseat to what transpired with this lawsuit from a guy, from Trevor, from the family of one Nicholas Emmenberger, who was killed in a car accident back in December 2018. Emmenberger was a bartender at a bar that's owned by Tiger Woods and also managed by Tiger Woods' girlfriend, who's the general manager. And apparently, Emmenberger is an alcoholic who had been drinking for at least 3 hours before his shift was up. His shift was over at 3 p.m. He got into an accident later that evening and was tragically killed during that accident. And apparently, was being reported that Tiger Woods is being accused, and the business is being accused by Emmenberger's attorneys that the evidence was destroyed in terms of the videotape showing from drinking for 3 hours before he left the bar during his shift. Now, I've been to a number of happy hours and a number of bars, and you'll see a bartender take a shot every so often, but every so often, or I've seen situations where the bartender along with the other coworkers will celebrate something, they take shots, but I've never seen a bartender just outright just get lit up while they're working. I can't remember ever coming across a drunk bartender. So the idea that this guy was just that lit during his shift, and you own the business, you apparently know that this guy has some drinking problem issues, and you allow somebody to work for you allow somebody to work for your organization who had been, if he had been drinking for 3 hours, he had to be drunk. I don't care how high his tolerance is for drinking. When you're drinking for 3 hours straight, you're drunk. So that kind of, I'm kind of mystified by that. But also the idea that this guy is still a, 24, 24, you're still a grown man. You're not a child. You're not a kid. You are a grown man at 24. And, I know there are laws that say if you leave somebody's house drunk, that the person who threw the party or who owns the house can be liable for a person getting into an accident. I understand some of those laws, and that could be the case. But again, at some point, you're grown. I mean, you are still a grown ass man. You're still a grown ass man who, again, should have. I guess. I mean, again, and I hate to speak ill on the dead, but I feel like you should have a better, a better, better self-awareness. Like maybe. Like there's, I'm sure there are Ubers or Lyfts in Florida, and maybe that's not the greatest job to have, being a bartender, considering that you are an alcoholic. I mean, again, I can't. If this guy was, I'm assuming that this guy was a high quality bartender, that he was good at his job. That he was good at his job. That's the reason why bartender, that this guy was good at his job. I don't know if he was a friend of Tiger Woods or a friend of Tiger Woods' girlfriend, but at a certain point, I just can't ask other adults to be responsible for other grown adults. Teenagers, one thing, little kids, another thing. But it's hard to ask another adult to be responsible for another adult. So that's the bottom line for me. Again, this is a tragic situation. If you're Tiger Woods, you probably just pay the money and just keep it moving. From that standpoint, in terms of selling out of court again, that's not selling out of court again. That's not going to bring this young man back. But you're 24. You're old enough to make quality decisions. You're old enough to know right from wrong, and you should know. Working at a bar, if I have serious issues or have trouble or am an alcoholic, probably not the wisest decision. So again, it is an unfortunate situation. Tiger Woods will be one of the favorites going into this tournament, but I'm sure this is the last thing that he wants to hear about or answer questions about moving forward as he prepares for this PGA championship as he tries to get major number 19. Of course, you had Game of Thrones, the penultimate episode, The Bells, somewhat predictable as far as Daenerys burning down the city and setting up a Jon versus Daenerys, basically the Starks versus the Daenerys and her one dragon now. And again, the game this last season of Game of Thrones really has been somewhat disappointing. They've had now what's because what has happened is they have used action battle scenes and the dragons and all this other nonsense to kind of take away from the fact that this that the writing and the storylines have been rushed. Even with the extra 20 minutes, extra 20, 25 minutes they've had the last three episodes, really hard. It's too many storylines. It's too much layered history of the show as far as how many connections and things that you have to know to turn a series that that have been going for 10 episodes for the past, for the better, for the first 6 seasons. I know last season was seven. I think it was seven last season. This season being six. So I think you gotta get to the final season. It's, get the final season 10 episodes. You got like, and HBO has done a poor job of ending certain series. I thought they did a poor job with only giving The Wire 10 episodes versus the 12 and 13 they have been given over the course of their 5 seasons. I thought they did a bad job with Boardwalk Empire. That last season, I believe, was only, I want to say, I think Boardwalk Empire's last season was only 8 episodes compared to, again, the 12 that I had been accustomed to in the previous 4 seasons. So HBO has not ended these some of these iconic series very well. And to me, they're making another mistake with Game of Thrones. Now again, everybody is gonna watch. It's gonna break. It's gonna set probably HBO record ratings records for HBO. But I really think that, I was talking with somebody about it, and they agreed in terms of plot lines being rushed, and having all these characters die in the same episode, and basically using all the special effects and battle scenes to kind of like compensate for the fact that this season has been rushed. But again, setting up, I think it was predictable to set up Daenerys as the Mad Queen and have her go up against the Starks. I think that was the ideal way that they wanted to end the series. And we'll see what happens in the series finale, which will be again an hour, about I'm gonna say 1 hour and 30 minutes, 1 hour and 20 minutes, and we'll cap off a series that will go down as one of the most successful series in the history of certainly of HBO. I think it could have certainly they could have ended it much better in terms of the final season. Game one tonight, Golden State, Houston, excuse me, Golden State, Portland. Houston is done, of course. Golden State, Portland. Portland, I give Portland a lot of credit. It is almost impossible to win a game seven in the NBA on the road. Only been done, had been done 28 other times in the history of the NBA. Nearly, I think the clip is about 80% of the time that the home team has won. I thought Denver, top to bottom, probably had a better team. But when you have a guy who goes berserk like CJ McCollum did, with the 37 points, when you have veteran players playing, Evan Turner, then you get the out, then you get the contributions by with a Zach Collins, and then then you get a game where Damian Lillard was not great, but I thought he was very patient, didn't force anything. Had I think he had like 8 or 9, maybe had a double double, almost he almost had a triple double, but had double digits in assists and about 9 rebounds. I think he had 8 or 9 rebounds. He played a very poised and very patient game, despite the fact that his shot was off, and gave CJ McCollum the necessary space to go out there and be the best player on the floor. Denver is coming. I mean, Denver is very talented. They're deep. They have. I wonder whether or not they'll bring Millsap back. They do, he's not going to be making $30 million. And I think Millsap on the open market won't command that kind of money that Denver can't sign him for short term. But remember, Michael Porter, who was a lottery pick last year, very talented player, like around 6'10", he'll be on the team next year. If those guys, Murray and Gary Harris, continue to improve along with Jokic, Denver will be right there as a one of the main contenders to come out the West next year. They are at, their team that I thought played better, performed better in the playoffs than expected. I didn't think they would beat San Antonio, and they certainly came with them very close, a CJ McCollum performance away from going to the Western Conference Finals. I thought that game was lost for Denver in the second quarter. I thought they should have been up. Excuse me. I thought they should have been up by at least 15. 13 to 15 points. Instead, they were only up by 9. They allowed Portland to hang in there. McCollum got hot. Lillard made a couple of big shots. Turner made a couple of plays. And there you go. Portland, give Portland a lot of credit. They looked to be, being pushed around this series. down 3-2, winning game seven at home or on the road is not easy in any sport, let alone basketball. Basketball in the NBA, I think the NBA is the toughest to win game seven on the sport. So they did a tremendous job. With that being said, they're up against a beast in the Golden State Warriors that, and we spoke about it earlier, a team that frankly knows how to win. And I think this would be a six game series. If Durant were playing, I would even say it could possibly be a sweep. But I think this will be a six game series. Who knows when Durant's going to come back? He's going to be out game one, probably even games one and two. If I were to guess, I wouldn't think that Durant wouldn't come back until the NBA Finals. I don't think you'll see Kevin Durant in the series. Curry has already said that DeMarcus Cousins, or mentioned that Cousins is not as close as people thought. So probably won't see him in the series. But there'll be to me a strong possibility that you will see both of them in the NBA Finals. Of course, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tomorrow night. Game one of the Western Conference Finals will be tonight. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Of course, you can catch this podcast anytime on YouTube, also on Blog Talk Radio later on tonight, and it's also on Facebook, Instagram, as many of my other platforms that I will post this link up to. As always, this is the Real Deal Podcast. Keeping it, telling it like it is with no apologies. Thanks for listening.